We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, another day of federally mediated litigation between the players and the owners, National Football League, Sports Radio WEEI, Mutt and Lou. And it's been a story we've talked about, and a story that a lot of NFL fans would love to see come to a head. And it's a story that, if you are following it, you've maybe more than once, twice, three times a day, if you're like me, logged on to ProFootballTalk.com, because they have been all over this thing. And Mike Florio is there, and he joins us here on the AT&T hotline. Mike, it's Mike and Lou. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Mike. Appreciate the time here today. Let's start with asking a very basic question from a lot of NFL fans. What's going on today, and are we any closer to any sort of decision?
Well, we don't know whether or not they're any closer. The fact that they continue to talk with each passing hour suggests that they must be making some progress, because it would have fallen apart. And if it doesn't fall apart, then they continue to talk. And if they continue to talk, common sense tells us they eventually do a deal. I think what we now need to start thinking about is whether or not there will be yet another extension of the deadline, which just thrills me to no end. You know, I can't get enough of these videos and images of guys walking into and out of a building in Washington, D.C., and it looks like that's going to continue beyond this week. They got a lot to get done by the end of the week. They didn't get together until 3 p.m. yesterday Eastern time. They broke at 7 p.m. There's a lot of issues that need to be resolved before they have a deal. I still think they're eventually going to get a deal. I'm cautiously optimistic they will. I just don't think it's going to happen this week.
Go back to yesterday. You mentioned a point that Lou brought up earlier, 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock. I think as NFL fans, we're wondering, why the hell aren't these guys in there 8, 10, 12 hours a day? What would set up just a four-hour negotiations yesterday?
Well, it was ridiculous, and I've been chiding the two sides for keeping bankers' hours, which, of course, makes all the bankers I know thrilled for me to be using that term. But I don't know any other term that suggests, in a quick and efficient package, that people aren't working very hard. And we've seen that over the last couple of weeks. They come late, they leave early, and we've heard time and again Commissioner Roger Goodell talk about a sustained commitment to round-the-clock talks. They haven't done round-the-clock talks once. And when you think about the fact that a head coach and his staff during football season will devote every waking moment to getting ready for one regular season game, what they're doing in D.C. is a heck of a lot more significant to the sport than one regular season game. They should be spending every waking moment. They should have cots at the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. They should be doing the minimal time away from talking and trying to get this done. And the more you make it a commitment, and the more inconvenience you put on people, the more likely you're going to be to get a deal done, because then the human factors come into play and they make people more likely to cooperate, more likely to move off their position, more likely to get a deal done.
Hey, Mike, if Judge Doty didn't reach to that decision, that the owner's kind of stripping him of that $4 billion lockout trust that they were kind of sitting on, if that didn't happen, do you think we'd still be sitting here in extension, or do you think that the owners would be sitting there with a stronger hand right now saying, we've got our cash in the back pocket, fine, we'll lock you out?
They'd have a little bit of a stronger hand. I still think, though, that the owners have enough money squirreled away to get through a 2011 season without football. The $4.3 billion would have been nice, but I don't know that it's fatal to the ability of the owners to withstand a lockout. I think it also helped add to the negative PR that the league has been experiencing over the past month, dating back to the Super Bowl ticket temporary seating fiasco in Dallas, and you know, the walk away on that Wednesday after the Super Bowl game, when the players said, we'll just take 50 cents of every dollar as presumably an opening proposal, and the owners stormed out of the room. The league, which had been enjoying very good PR in these talks, has taken a hit lately, and I think last week contributed to that. And I just think at the end of the day, the league doesn't want to embark on this litigation minefield with decertification and injunctions and antitrust lawsuits. When you do that, each side loses control over the outcome, And I've been saying this for the past 4 or 5 days. You know, a lockout is like skydiving. It sounds pretty darn good when you're on the ground and you're talking about doing it. When you're in the plane and the door's open and the chute's on and they're telling you to jump, you have a very different perspective about skydiving. I think both sides were standing at the doorway to that proverbial airplane last week, and they decided they want no part of jumping out of the plane.
I think with these owners right now talking about the revenue sharing, basically saying $1 billion isn't going to cut it. We want two. We can't get by here. Is it going to come down to them having to open up the books? Now, I know Peter King reported earlier, too, that reminded people that if it does get to litigation, that they would probably be forced to open up the books then. Is this just inevitable?
I think it is. Now, I think they'd have to open the books even wider in litigation. When I was practicing law, I'd have clients, businesses who had disgruntled employees who said, we want our personnel file, and the client's reaction would be, well, you're not getting it. And I'd say to them, well, look, they're going to get it anyway if they sue you. If you go ahead and give it to them, maybe you don't get sued. Maybe you get sued anyway, but if you give it to them, maybe you head this thing off. So I think that the NFL needs to look at the inevitability of those numbers coming available if there is some type of litigation. And I just think it makes sense. You know, the more people think about it, the more they understand the issues. If the owners are saying to the players, we think that we're not making enough money on this arrangement, we want to change the current deal and take some of that money back, no one in their right mind should just shrug their shoulders and say, okay, we'll take your word for it. You never take anybody's word for it in something like this. The stakes are too high. It's borderline malpractice for anyone involved in advising the two sides to say, sure, go ahead and take their word for it. You never take their word for it, especially in light of what we learned in the lockout insurance case. And we learned there that the NFL had an obligation to maximize the total revenues for both sides, and the NFL set that obligation aside and cut a deal for itself to allow this money to flow to the detriment of their partners, supposed partners, the players. So there's no reason for the players to take them at their word, and if the owners want money back, they got to find a way to open the books.
Let's go back to the litigation part, talking to Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. The stories that I keep reading and kind of this doomsday scenario for the National Football League would be the decertification, Mike, of the union. That, you know, we don't have the extension that you talked about. They go into court, they decertify, the NFL tries to challenge it, they get back in front of Judge Doty on Monday, and he has sided with the players pretty much across the board here. And he agrees that, you know what, you can decertify, and that leads to the players all of a sudden challenging things like salary cap, challenging things like franchise tag because they're no longer part of a union. Is that a realistic sort of doomsday scenario for the league and the players?
Here's you're in the right church, but not quite the right pew. Here's what would happen. When the union decertifies, the 1,800 members of the union become non-union employees who are working not for one company but 32 separate businesses. If you all talked last year about the American Needle case at all, that's why the American Needle case that was resolved by the Supreme Court against the NFL was so important. The NFL was trying to get a ruling that for antitrust purposes, we're one business. If you're one business, you can't be sued for antitrust by the players if the union decertifies. That's what that fight was all about. So the union decertifies, then 32 separate businesses have to decide how they're going to do their business. Are we going to shut down altogether and essentially lock out these non-union employees? They lose on that one because that's a clear antitrust violation. So then the question becomes, are they going to come up with rules regarding the draft, free agency, salary cap, minimum salaries, rules that would apply to 32 separate businesses? They do that. The union sues for antitrust, saying you can't have any rules that would restrain trade in any way and that would limit competition. You're 32 separate businesses. You need to act accordingly. That's where the antitrust lawsuit would come from. That's where it came from 20 years ago when Reggie White and others, including the recently deceased Dave Duerson, put their names on that lawsuit after the union decertified when the strike in 1987 didn't work. And from that litigation came a settlement agreement. You know, 95% of all civil actions get settled. The settlement agreement in the Reggie White antitrust case became the collective bargaining agreement that may or may not expire depending upon whether or not they get a deal done.
Mike, through all this here now, which side do you think is more unified? Is it the owners? Is it the players?
Well, the owners have been unified from day one. And even though the owners have some fundamental disagreements about revenue sharing,
right,
and, you know, they've been trying to avoid showing any cracks in the foundation. So I'd say that the owners are long-term more unified. But all it takes to launch the doomsday scenario is short-term unification on the part of the players. They decide to pull that cord and jump out of that plane and decertify and launch this this litigation Armageddon, then the damage is done. And the players may lose in the end, but if the players have the resolve to go through with it at a time when the owners don't have that resolve, then that can hurt everyone. And I really think that's what happened last week. When they got right up to it, both sides decided, we really don't want to do this.
The bottom line to me is always about money. It always comes down to money. And when I look at the revenue sharing, I still think that's the big piece here. But the 18-game schedule, the owners jumped on it. They made it their baby early in this process. Now, all of a sudden, you're starting to hear the more players against it, talking about the health of us. Are both sides using this 18-game schedule as a negotiating chip to get what they really want in the end?
I think it is. I had my daily show just a little bit ago, Pro Football Talk Live, and Ross Tucker, who spent a year with the Patriots, 6 years altogether in the NFL, has a bunch of different media jobs right now. He believes, based on what he's hearing, that 18 games is going to be the end result, and that you use those 2 extra weeks of football to grow the pie to help make up for the shrinkage in the size of the slice of the pie that the players are going to take. And a lot of that posturing and opposition to expanding the regular season by 2 weeks, that was just that. It was rhetoric. It was posturing. Now, I think the players will get reduced exposure to contact in the off season and in training camp and maybe even in the preseason. There will only be 2 preseason games if it comes to that. But I also think that it was all part of the leverage game. And so much of what's going on now, when you hear the pessimism, when you hear that the NFLPA is ready to decertify on a moment's notice, I also think that part of that is part of this posturing, because the moment you show weakness, the moment that you indicate that you're not ready to see this thing through to the end, you necessarily lose leverage at the bargaining table.
Mike, we suspect there are players that financially could not deal with not getting a paycheck in 2011. Are there football owners of the National Football League that would need help from other owners or need help in general if there's not football this year?
Possibly. Now, it all depends upon how much debt the owners have. You know, Jerry Jones is going to be hard-pressed to pay the mortgage on his new stadium without that $4.3 billion coming in, or his $134 million of it and change that he would get. And I think that it just all depends on what obligations you have. The NFL is going to work very hard to keep its teams from going into default on any of its loan obligations. That's the key. And without the $4.3 billion, I think they can scrape it together to keep everyone afloat. But you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that money is going to disappear at some point. You know, the bottom line is, even if they can avoid imploding in 2011 without football, you're creating a financial problem for yourself that's not going to go away for a long time by coming up with loans and digging into nest eggs and, you know, selling off a small portion of the team to raise some equity and to raise some assets, rather. So I just don't think, like I said earlier, I don't think either side really wants to do what has to be done to use their ultimate weapons that they have available to them.
Okay, so what are we looking at here the rest of the week? Are we looking at an extension again? Are we looking at a lockout, decertifying the union? What to look for?
Most likely outcome, I say, would be another extension. And they extended a couple of weeks back in 2006 to get the deal done. They stopped the clock on the commencement of the 2006 league year, which would have been the last year with a salary cap under that agreement, and the teams would have been crippled by the specific rules that were in place at the time for the last year with a cap. So everything got held up for 2 or 3 weeks. They did a deal. It was by the end of March, and everything proceeded. I think that so an extension, most likely outcome. Second most likely outcome is getting a deal done. Third most likely outcome is everything falling apart. I don't think it's all going to fall apart. I'd like to see a deal get done so we can get on to free agency. Mm-hmm. But I'll settle for another extension, even though I'm really getting sick of the back and forth and the comings and goings and who showed up today and who didn't show up today. But, you know, there's nothing else to report on until they get this done and teams start signing players and losing players to free agency. There really isn't much else to talk about other than the draft.
Mike, is there a drop-dead date? We knew that last week we thought was that date we get an extension. You talk about another extension. Is there a date where these two sides will say, you know what, we got to take time off here and we got to come back at some point down the road and just sort of shut down all this negotiation. And the date I think of is in and around late April and the draft. I wonder, you know, if there's that date in mind for these two sides.
Well, but see, the thing is, when they break, when they stop this process and allow the CBA to expire, the union right before that will decertify and launch the litigation missiles. So you can't just take a 2 or 3 week break. I think as a practical matter, you'd like to see this get done by the end of March. You know, there are ownership meetings in the 20s in March, 23, 24, something like that. NFLPA meetings coming up next week. They can move those back if they need to. They can reschedule. They can be flexible. But I just think from the standpoint of, you know, getting a deal done, there isn't a hard date. I think the bigger reality, the bigger risk is at some point the union's going to wake up and say, you know what? This is essentially a lockout. Nobody's getting signed. No business is being done. Mm-hmm. Our free agents aren't getting their signing bonuses. This is a lockout without calling it a lockout. And you got 24 hours to get this deal done, or, you know, we're going to turn this non-lockout lockout into a real lockout.
Last one for me. You know, we hear around here locally that Bob Kraft is a major player, that, you know, Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones and Jerry Richardson are three of the owners that are at the forefront of this. Do we read into the fact that he's traveling abroad and not right now involved in any sort of conversations, Mike?
I think the only thing that reasonably could be read into that is he is confident that it's moving in the right direction and that a deal is going to be reached either this week or next week, or if not next week, the week after that. That he believes, based on the movement that was made last week, that the two sides want to get a deal done. They're moving toward getting a deal done, but there's still, you know, you have to do the dance. You can't just jump right to the deal. You have to do that dance. You have to chip away at the iceberg that is between the two parties, and you keep chipping and you keep chipping and you finally get a deal done. And I'm convinced that if Robert Kraft believed they weren't on track for that to happen, he wouldn't have left.
Mike, we'll see what happens this week. We'll keep an eye on any sort of extension and, of course, keep an eye out on ProFootballTalk.com. Enjoy the work, as always, Mike. Thanks for the time.
All right, thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, joining us on the AT&T Hotline. Find out what's possible with the nation's fastest mobile broadband network, AT&T. Rethink possible.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.